Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of February 26th, and we are talking on a Saturday night, Sunday morning? I don't know. It's late. It's way after midnight. And with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm in my gold medal frame of mind here.
You're feeling like a winner. Yeah.
Exactly. Either that or I'm ready to, you know, fail a doping test or something. I don't know. It's just Olympics. I'm just high on the Olympics.
I tell you, I'm all Olympic'd out. I want to see another five ring design, logo, emblem, whatever you want to call it, for like another 10 years. I could live without it.
Right. And you know, it's going to be worse from tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow, in fact, I think they're going to hand out like cheerleader skirts and pom-poms at my office, because we are official Olympic cheerleaders.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well,
it's going to get ugly.
Yeah. Because of various circumstances, including the Olympics, our schedules, our family situations, travel plans, we are taping on at this ungodly hour on Saturday. And I wanted you to explain why we didn't tape on Friday morning, because we have an interview with Randy Messenger, and I actually pleaded with him to squeeze us in because we were going to tape on Friday morning, and he did that. He did so. He was very gracious, and he squeezed us in, but we end up taping on Saturday night because...
Oh, is this the segment where it's called Embarrass Jim?
No, this is the segment that's called I Can Never Get That Sleep Back.
I got it back.
Yes, sorry. I'm not you and you're not me. Sorry, Alex. Thank you.
Well, that's all right. That's lucky for both of us, I think. Yeah, that would be awkward. I set my alarm for 6 a.m. So that we could do this after about 3 hours of sleep. And as John said, the Olympics have been eating into my schedule. That's my excuse. You know, I've been working these basically two, 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. shifts every day.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah. You overslept.
Yeah. Well, I set my alarm for 6. I set it the day before. It went off and I went, oh, good. I'm out of bed. And then I was asleep before I could move another muscle.
The pillow monster then reached up and grabbed you.
Pretty much like that. Gravity enveloped me, and as did sleep. And then I woke up about 7:30. I'm going, hey, wait a second. Wasn't I supposed to be awake?
Wasn't I?
And I looked at
I thought
my
I was
phone
awake. How did I get back in bed?
I never got out of bed, dude. I'm going, geez, you know, that 10 seconds extra sleep really made my back feel better.
Right.
It was turned out to be an hour and a half, and I've got like 275 missed phone calls. And
I only called 275 times. Yeah, I was trying to call once every minute. All right. Well, a special thanks to Randy Messenger again. He like I said, squeezed us in. And after that, we're going to talk about what we've seen of camps and preseason games that started today, which is not much. And then we have a JBW-generated high heat question. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I contacted Randy Messenger a while back, and I explained that neither you nor I could go to camp this year, and I begged him for an interview by phone, and he had a lot going on. His family was around, and he had things to do after they work out, you know, and other things to do than rest at camp. They don't wear these guys out enough, but he did fit us into his schedule on Thursday. And we can't thank him enough. And this is Randy's going into his ninth season here in Japan. He's 84-70 with a 2.98 ERA.
I was going to say, he doesn't look 84.
Oh, no, not yet.
His family's not big enough yet.
Like, yeah, I was looking at his...
And he'll look,
Yeah, you're helping. Yeah. Randy looks fine. Leave him alone. The one thing I was looking through his numbers, and do you know how many balks he has here? You know, you have always talked about on the show, you've always talked about how foreign pitchers come here and struggle with the balk situation. Do you know how many balks he has in his career? Offhand.
I would say zero.
He has one.
Oh. Well, you know, when I say struggle, I don't mean it's a lifelong struggle, but I mean it's an initial adjustment struggle for some guys. And then some guys get like, oh, it's a pause, okay. And then they so balk call, and this, oh, it's a pause, okay, it's a prescribed pause, okay, I got it. And then, well, that's a balk too? You're kidding me. I don't know, your pause wasn't long enough. Okay, so I'll really pause. This is balk number three.
Get your pause off me.
Exactly. Pretty much, indeed. This is the pause that incites riots.
Right.
So, yeah, that I remember that happened to Chris Brock and a few other pitchers, that they got three balks in one game.
Wow.
Because of the umpire. So, yeah, so that's the thing. So one is pretty outstanding. So
yeah, he's done a good job with that. So he found a few minutes to call back on his own time on Thursday after practice and working out and all that stuff. So let's take a listen. All right, joining us from Miyazaki is Randy Messenger, Tigers ace pitcher. How you doing, buddy? Thank you very much for joining us by phone.
No problem, man. Doing good. Just got done eating some dinner.
You're so down to earth. It's so fun always talking to you. We really appreciate having you on the show. Now, I know yesterday you threw an inning in a practice game. How do you feel, and how is the arm, shoulder, and the legs and everything else?
Yeah, it was nice to finally get out there, and get one inning just to see live hitters in there. I've thrown a couple bullpens where guys have just stood in. I really don't care for, batting practices or simulated games. I just prefer a real game situation. But, yeah, it was nice getting out there and seeing some hitters actually, competing again. And, it was a nice day. I got four ground balls. One is a base hit, but, it was a ground ball, so I was happy with my location yesterday, keeping the ball down and changing speeds, and everything feels good right now.
All right, now camp is so long in Japan. It starts on February 1st. How do you make it through this lengthy, lengthy training period?
Well, luckily, being able to be established over here, we get a little more leeway, and they trust the guys that have proved themselves over here, not only to just follow the routine that everybody else is doing, but they know and they trust in you that you're going to be ready and you're going to prepare yourself the way you need to get ready for the season.
Okay. So, but how do you, you're saying to me that you're not working as hard as some of the other Japanese players maybe, or you're not forced to go through some of the rigors that these guys go through?
Right. The younger kids, their training regimen is a little more different. They obviously have to run a lot more than we do. I do a lot of running, what's on the program that day at the field. But most of my conditioning consists of coming back to the hotel where we have an indoor facility and a gym here. And that's where I normally get most of my actual conditioning in. We have a treadmill, we have an elliptical, and like I said, we have the gym here. So that's where I do my work. I like to do it without all the cameras around.
Right. Now, what things do you like about camp, if there are any?
Just being able to get out and see the young players, this is their time to shine, and watching them and just being able to be a mentor to the younger pitchers, now that, like I said, I've been established over here and I've done pretty well, a lot of the younger guys now aren't so hesitant to come up to me and, ask for advice on things, and that's what I enjoy doing, teaching these kids as much as I possibly can, whether they take in, two things I said in the whole conversation. But as long as they're listening and, they're in tune with what I'm talking about, that's all I care about.
Well, I had that situation when I played basketball, and sometimes you can yell, and sometimes you can speak at a normal voice, and sometimes You don't have to say anything at all. You show them how. But
right,
sometimes it clicks in. You know? Yeah, at some right. point they hear it. You know, maybe not the first time, maybe not the second, and all that. So, what do you dislike about camp? I guess that's an easy question for me to figure out, but I did want to ask you.
Yeah, the fact that it's so long. You know, that's probably the only thing I dislike about it. But just being down here in the warmer weather, you know, is really nice. You know, at the beginning of the camp, it was cold, but it's finally started to warm up. And just being down here, being able to interact more with the fans, you know, spring training, you get to interact with the fans a lot more. That's what I like doing.
Okay. Now, preseason games are going to start Saturday. So I call it fake baseball. I mean, I don't have any qualms about
right.
it. And the reason I do is because guys have their own agendas. Some guys are working on some things. Other guys are trying to impress. If they're young
right.
players, you know, the results are really murky. You really can't judge anything from it. What's your opinion on these games?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way. You know, I still look at them as practice games. It's just getting you prepared for the season. There's certain things everybody needs to work on, and just like you said, and that's one of my things is, you know, just to come in, get what I need to work in, work on my bullpen, work on the little things, you know, slide step, you know, varying holds. You know, just doing different things. So it's just your time to work and get prepared for the season.
What do you think about the, I mean, you play, obviously, so what do you think about the results of preseason games?
Some of it's good, but, you know, a lot of it's inflated, obviously, because, you know, not everybody got their A squad out there. You know, most of the time it's, you know, you might have one of the top-notch pitchers out there, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, you might have a couple of the star, you know, position players out there, you know, so, I mean, really it's just the time for the young kids to shine and show what they can do to see if they're going to be able to provide any kind of help with the big club, you know.
Right, right. Well, so the young kids and some, maybe some of those free agents, you picked up some veterans, so yeah. When you come into camp, what's the first thing you look at team-wise? I mean, you talked about the young guys, but there are new players, there's the condition of the veterans. There's the other pitchers.
Uh-huh.
What do you focus on when you look around at the other guys on the team?
Just to see how the camaraderie is and see how everybody's, you know, make sure everybody's mindset's on the same thing, you know. And so far, so good with us that, you know, the guys are doing really great. Everybody's pulling for each other. You know, everybody has their main goal, you know, obviously, which is you, show. So,
Championship, baby. Championship or bust.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what you play this game for. You know, everybody remembers the champion. Nobody remembers second place. So that seems to be everybody's main goal this year, which is great. You know, and obviously other guys, you know, they have their personal goals that they want to reach. I mean, everybody should. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you end up winning the championship, all your personal goals will fall into place.
Right, right, right. Now, in the major leagues, you know, mound visits, the number of mound visits is going to be limited, and there's a limit in NPB already.
Right.
And
right.
They're going to have this rule change. Have you ever thought about the number of mound visits and how important are they? Like I said, I already know it's limited here in Japan. It's been that way for a while.
Yeah, I really don't think, you know, it's a big deal for me. You know, only certain situations obviously dictate the situation, so... for me, you know, that's what the scouting pregame is all about. You know, you get your game plan ahead of schedule, you know, before the game starts. And then if something changes, because it's baseball, everything always changes, then you have your mound visit. But the multiple mound visits, I don't think it's really a big deal to me. I don't mind the fact that there's a limit on them anymore. You know, like I said, you should know what the heck you want to do before you even get in the game, so...
I like that. I mean, they talk about it being part of pace of play, but and I'm just wondering how they came up with that number.
Right.
It just seemed weird to me. All right. As you move up in age now, how do you develop as a pitcher? How do you add to your repertoire, and what things do you do, especially during camp, to evolve?
Yeah, that's like my main thing is, you know, conditioning. You know, my main thing is endurance. You know, the more I can run and get my distance and get my legs underneath me, you know, get all that stuff going, you know, I feel like I'll be prepared for the season. You know, that's, if you don't have the endurance at the beginning of the season, you're sure is not going to have it in the hot parts of the year here in Japan. And, you know, humid and hot it gets here. And that's when most of the guys, they end up, you know, leveling out or, you know, dropping below the line at that point.
Right.
So, like, for me, like I said, it's just getting my legs underneath me, getting my endurance, you know, making sure I really concentrate on conditioning.
But do you need to add to your, do you think your stuff is what it is and guys are going to have to, you know, make the adjustments, or do you think you have to add?
No, I definitely don't feel I have to add. I just, you know, there's always improvement. You know, there's always room for improvement regardless of where you are. If you're a top-notch player or freaking lower-level guy,
right.
You can always improve. So, you know, when it comes to me working in the bullpen, that's, you know, that day, you know, I have my mindset of what I want to work on that day, and that's what I work on, you know. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting better, just being better consistent with location and, you know, pitch sequence.
Okay. Last here, I want to talk about the mounds in NPB now. Do you have a favorite NPB mound?
Favorite, I would say,
just the mound, not the stadium.
Right. Yeah, favorite, pretty much, you know, I've always enjoyed Nagoya Domes because it's always been a big mound and it's hard. Kyocera Domes, very similar. And also Hokkaido up there, you know, where the Fighters play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've always been big mounds, good hard mounds. Pushman's finally, you know, getting into it, but, you know, they don't make their visitor bullpen mound the same as the game mound, which is kind of frustrating.
Right.
The bullpen's really soft and crappy, and then you get out to the game mound, and it's big and hard, you know. So they're at an advantage there.
Huh.
But, I don't really have a favorite. I just really appreciate the bigger, taller, harder mounds.
Yeah, I've always said that the Nagoya Dome, in general, is major league caliber as a facility.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's good to hear you say that. All right, so do you have to make adjustments when you pitch on the Koshien mound?
No, because it's my home stadium. You know, at first, when I first got here, absolutely. You know, it was a softer mound, lower mound. But, you know, throughout the years, I really enjoy pitching there. You know, it helps having our crowd behind us, obviously. But that was just an adjustment I had to make early on in my career. Now it's just second nature to pitch there.
All right. Well, I know you really enjoy camp. Like you said, getting back with the players and everybody. And I'm looking for big things from the Tigers this year. So we really appreciate you being with us. And take care of yourself and have a good camp. Thanks a lot for talking to us.
No problem. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure, John.
All right, bud. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Thank you very much again, Randy. Always a pleasure talking to you, big guy.
It is. I remember, well, you know, Randy's hasn't changed much. I remember in 2010 when Randy Messenger came and Jason Standridge joined the Tigers and Matt Merton joined the Tigers and Craig Brazell was there from the Cebu Lions. And I thought, man, this is what a great group of four. This is the only thing that were keeping those four guys from being like the ultimate foreign, you know, foreign player team was that Randy didn't talk a lot.
Mm.
You know, Jason and Craig and Matt would all pretty much talk the hind legs off numerous donkeys. But Randy's one of those, you know, he's one of those guys who he'll talk about lots of things if he thinks it's worth saying. And I'm not trying to criticize the other guys for being friendly. But he just doesn't fill the air with noise like some people John knows who can't sleep, don't have proper sleep habits. So anyway, indeed. So I remember that, and when hearing the interview, I think, wow, that was spare. That was typical. That was very typical Randy Messenger spare.
Yeah, so, you know, I was told not to talk about the weather, but even Randy mentioned the fact that it was cold at the start, and I'm just, you know, repeating what he said. But anyway, what was the thing that, what was the thing that you were dreaming about when you were sleeping, oversleeping during the taping time on Friday.
When I was listening to Randy and hearing Randy Messenger in my sleep, man, is that that's some scary stuff there. Okay, no, I was a couple of things. One, I you know, when I listened, I thought, you know, what I had was questions. I wasn't getting answers, but I was getting more questions. You know, especially, you know, the one talking about his teammates, because he has very strong opinions, you know, about what's right and what's not. I mean, not about everything, obviously, but things that matter to him, you know, what his teammates need to do better. He cares a lot about as you heard about, you know, the team winning. And he does have opinions about players who he thinks maybe are going in the wrong direction, as we heard in a previous interview with him about Shintaro Fujinami. And
correct.
I was thinking about that. So he pays attention, you know, so he's telling us he pays attention to the team, you know, the team orientation, the players' attitudes, and, you know, and their spirit. And I it just occurred to me, what the heck, if he sees something, you know, everything was good, you know, he gave us the little report card, everything checked out, so I'm guessing there was no sort of like Randy Messenger team leader blow-ups there in spring training, but I'm sort of curious what would have happened if that weren't the case. You know, who would he talk to, what would he say? I mean, I have had a couple. Andrew Jones comes to mind as a player who specifically said his role on the team was to monitor the team and be a conduit of ideas between players and manager Senichi Hoshino and fill that, you know, he had that concrete leadership role in mind.
Right.
So I'm just curious what Randy would have said, you know, if the team was on the, if he felt it was on the wrong track. So that was one thing. And I don't really have an answer for that.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear him say that all the guys are pulling in the same direction while they're at camp. It's like, what do you mean pulling in the same direction? All you guys are doing is training, right? I mean, you know, you go through these drills. I mean, it makes sense. But then again, it doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? Because you've got guys with different agendas. You've got, as I said in the interview, you've got guys who coming in there thinking, okay, I'm gonna stand out any way I can. I'm gonna get the coaches to notice me and know who I am and learn my name. And then you got guys who are thinking, man, I just want to get through this without getting hurt. And then you've got guys, you know, maybe some free agents who are there. Looking to make an impact, and so they're, you know, everyone, it's just a different approach, a different dynamic for a lot of guys. And so when he says they're pulling in the same direction in camp, I'm like, that you're right, it did leave me with that question, like
it seems normal, but on the other hand, I mean, here's the thing, is that we don't, you know, and we talk about this, we don't see it. We don't see what the dynamic is within the team. One of the things you get in Japan is that every foreign player says, oh, what a wonderful team I have. You know, and it's sort of like variations on wonderful. And when people have said, oh, it's like the best team I've ever played for. And I said, well, like in which concrete sense is it the best? Oh, it's different. You know, it's really hard to pin down. I'm not criticizing guys for that, but it's certainly a different feeling. It fills a sort of hole that didn't, you know, what can I say? That the most of these American players, their definition of what a team is and does, gets an added dimension when they come to Japan. So it's not like there was something missing before. And it's not that they had a bad experience before, but they get a different experience that is in some way more whole without taking anything away from what they experienced before. You know, it's just like, you know, they went from 3D to 4D in some respect. So so they always say, oh, it's like the best team I've ever played for. You hear that all the time. And in what way? People can't really compare, you know, I can't say it's better than the, you know, when I was with the White Sox in 2012, because that was a great team, you know, everybody was so wonderful, but here everybody's more wonderful. So it is hard to imagine what he's talking about in that respect, but there are, having said that, there are so many ways teams can go wrong. There are new players, there are free agents, there are players leaving, there are players who are looking for jobs, and while ostensibly everybody's happy and chirpy and in high spirits and glad to be playing baseball, you just know, if there's a problem, boy, that would sure stand out in spring training, I guess. I guess that's the message, is that there were no problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or at least that's what he wants to tell us.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if people not, seemingly not pulling in the same direction or not on the same page, he would know, or you would know, and you maybe can address it then. But still, it just seems like it's so early to me that, and now preseason game started on Saturday here today. So now you've got a goal in trying to win games, so to speak. But again, that I think that's murky. That's a murky or nebulous situation when you've got guys just working on things. So
nebulous. Good. Good word.
So I absolutely love him saying that he's not looking to add like a sinker or a one seamer or anything like that. He's just trying to get in shape and throw his pitches because he's been really good. He's been really good since he arrived. And I'm not saying he has to add something, but the reason I asked the question is because he's 36 and, he's getting up there now. We know some power pitchers in the past have been able to throw their stuff for a long time and throw hard. So maybe he'll be able to do that. And he still brings it. I'm not saying he's strictly power, but he throws hard. And I think that's a big part of his game. And so, I wondered if it was time. So he said no. He's getting those legs in shape so he can make it through the dog days of summer and then be there when it counts in the home stretch and get his team there. So
he sounded very confident, like I've been here before and this is the way I approach it. And I don't mean in a bad sense of like, oh, you're setting yourself up for a fall by being, thinking you know what the season's going to be like. But I think he that's part of the plan. The season's going to be unique and different, but this is how I need to prepare for it. So it was nothing really too, I thought, outlandish in that, but I thought it was interesting. And I specifically did want to know about the mounds because everybody, I've had this thing about baseballs for about the last 7 or 8 years, about Japan's baseball and how they're different and people telling me, oh, it affects the game in this way and it affects pitches in this way. And I have a pretty good impression of how the Japanese baseball affects pitches. And then when I was at the winter meetings, everybody stopped talking about the baseball and started talking about Japanese mounds. And I'm going, the people who knew about Major League mounds and Japanese mounds, because I'd always asked about the balls, and what happened was I stopped asking about the balls and I started asking about the pitches.
Okay.
And particularly a two-seamer. And Tsuyoshi Wada sort of put me on that track, so this is his fault. So if you don't like this discussion, blame him.
Okay.
And the question is, why don't guys throw it so much in Japan? And I asked everybody, and they said, basically, that the mounds and they blamed Koshien mostly. They said a lot of the mounds are soft. They used to be soft, and there aren't. There's probably about a handful of guys in Japan who throw two seamers. You pretty much can count them on one hand. And oddly enough, one of the guys who throws the two seamer is actually a one seamer, who is Tomoyuki Sugano, which is basically a two seamer that is kind of got a little knuckleball factor in there.
Okay.
in that
a wrinkle.
It's not. Yeah. It's gripped with the two fingers like on both sides of one seam instead of across the ball. like a traditional fastball, so it's got a little more unpredictable movement on it. But anyway, and the other one, of course, that's interesting is and I say that because Deltagraphs, you know, tracks the pitches and it can't differentiate when they track a pitch, you know, using their cameras and such. They can't differentiate the movement of a pitch that somebody calls a one seamer from something that they call a two seamer. And so we get the pitcher who's famous for his two seamer, who doesn't really throw one, who is Yasuaki Yamasaki.
Right, with the base start, right?
Yeah, and his two-seamer is, in fact, a splitter. So
don't tell the announcers that.
Yeah, exactly, because they're like, you know.
You'll mess up their game.
Exactly. I mean, and so there's a few of those guys, and they just, you know, they just repeat whatever the pitchers say. That's sort of the custom in Japan. So, So anyway, so I got on that, and they talked about the mound. So I was really curious about how a pitcher in Japan adjusts to the Koshien mound, and what I really wanted to know is, oh, and I had to learn how to do this. I had to learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. But we didn't get that. He just got used to it,
right?
Which is what you know. Dennis Sarfati told me the same thing about Cebu. You know, you just get used to it.
Right.
You know, it used to be a sand pile, and so you get used to pitching on a sand pile.
Yeah, I did notice though. Did you know what was in common with all the stadium or all his favorite mounds?
Yeah, hard and high.
Well, no, they were the newest dome stadiums.
Oh, well, you know, people tell me the Mazda Stadium is also quite good, which is a new one, which is not a dome stadium, but Tokyo Dome's also quite good, I hear, in that they're harder. The Mazda one is interesting because the guy who threw the most two-seam pitches in Japan was Hiroki Kuroda when he came back from the majors, and then his problem was not the mound. His problem was the ball, and that it doesn't run the same way. So even when it sinks properly, it doesn't run the same as an MLB ball does. And so he, instead of pitching from the middle of the rubber, he shifted, you know, to the first base side of the rubber to get more angle on it. So that was his adjustment, but it's just not the same animal as you get in the majors. So.
Right. All right, well, it was a great talk, and I really enjoyed talking to Randy, and as always, and we look forward to talking to him during the season as well, but it's good to talk to a guy. I don't think we've had a guy on during training camp period because we haven't been able to go in so long, and so we really appreciate him calling in. That was big for us. Thank you very much, Randy.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you, guys.
All right.
I want to hear about your hairstyle this year and see if your wife's letting you grow it out or your son growing it out.
We'll see. All right. Making a four-seam transition, we will talk briefly about the preseason because we haven't seen much of it. As soon as we come up from air from the Olympics, which end, thank God, tomorrow on Sunday, I literally today saw three pitches. I was flipping channels. And I saw three pitchers. So check this out. And they were it was incredible. I saw DeNA rookie Taishi Kusamoto hit a homer on one pitch. And I flipped later on to another channel that had baseball. And I saw Shuhei Takahashi of Chunichi. And he went deep. And then I saw Shinosuke Abe, who flew out to the track, to the warning track. And those were the three pitches I saw today. Very, very fruitful.
Would you say get with the program
pitches,
or something?
I don't know what that says about what I'm going to see during the regular season, but if I time things really well, I guess I can see a lot of home runs.
I think so.
All left-handed batters. Yeah, all left-handed batters, and they all yanked the ball down the line. It was amazing. Three pitches.
It's reminiscent of one of my favorite Senichi Hoshino encounters. Well, I get to mention him twice today. One time I mentioned to Tim that, you know, I'd telling my wife yesterday, I hadn't seen you in a long time. And he looked at me with those big fierce eyes and he stuck his finger at my chest and he says, "That's an omen."
Oh, gosh. I would turn and run to the parking lot.
Well, we were in an elevator, and then he laughed. He cackled very much like you just did, and walked out of the elevator laughing to himself.
That's great. Well, I haven't seen much other than I have seen some highlights, and I did watch highlights of a Swallows game in which Norichika Aoki, who has returned to NPB after seven seasons, and he grounded out weekly a couple times to short in the at-bats that I saw, and said he didn't have his timing down, and I just thought, well, he's going to have an adjustment period again, because obviously he's grew up facing Japanese-style pitchers, but he has totally changed his approach and his thinking and his swing for major league pitching.
Yep.
And so now he's going to have to get used to a crew of pitchers, or a whole slate of pitchers, maybe except for a few, including Hitoki Iwase of the Dragons. But most of the guys he's never faced before.
True
so
enough.
I think he has a long adjustment period coming up, but I think he will adjust. I still like his swing.
I think
And I think he's going to be good. So yeah.
No, I think he'll be able to incorporate some of the things he learned, and he'll have a couple of additional. It's not his bat isn't as quick as it was 8 years ago, but the ball's a little nicer, a little more hitter friendly than it was his last year in NPB.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I expect decent things from him. I think he's going to have I expect him to have a really good on base percentage. I don't think his average is going to go back up. I don't think he's going to get a 180 hit season or anything, but he could hit 290 with about a 360, 370 on base percentage.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what he wants to do.
Okay. I'm not going to predict any numbers, obviously, but I think he's going to do well. I think he's going to be able to hit, but of course he's with the Swallows, so we have to worry about injury.
Indeed, yeah.
The Swallows have married the injury bug, and they are making sure it's happy for the rest of its life. I'm pretty much disgusted, but I have to bring it up because we just get force-fed Daisuke Matsuzaka constantly, and so
really, finally, that's one of the best things about the Olympics is I've been able to ignore him.
You've been able to avoid him. He's still out there. If you all you gotta do is flip on a sports.
No, you see, I haven't been looking at sports TV, so
well,
there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You don't have time, but I mean, if you had time, you'd see him. He hasn't gone anywhere. I'm just curious to see how he throws in actual game situations and if he can really get any batters out at all.
Well, if it's like it has been the past 3 years, the answer will be yes until the season starts, and then we'll come up with an ailment that somebody on the Dragons pitching staff will say, are you sure you didn't want to sign with Yakult? because it looks like you were meant for those guys.
Right. Yeah, you were meant for them. Moving to the Tigers, I did see that this newcomer, Willen Rosario,
Came over from Korea, yeah.
He played in Korea, and he had back-to-back seasons in Korea where he hit 300, or at least 300, at least 30 home runs, and had at least 100 RBIs. So,
wow.
This is the Tyrone Woods school of success, I believe. He came from Korea after having some success over there and had success and actually won a Japan championship with the Dragons. So, and Willen is busting, they're saying really good things about him. They like his swing. He's hitting for power. Of course, these are practice games and, we'll see what he does against, pitching in the preseason. And then again, it starts all over in the regular season where the pitchers do different things than they do.
I want to indicate here, something, and I've probably said it before on the podcast, it's something Matt Merton talked about his first year in spring training, and he always kind of soft-pedaled it after that, which was one of the important things when you first come to camp is to allow the coach, to give the coaches an opportunity to have your back. And the way you do that is by looking good in camp, in the cage, from day one.
Is that the coaches or the scouts or?
No, that's the coaches. The
okay.
That's the coaches, because what you want to do if, because he said, and he didn't find out about, Matt didn't find out about this until after the fact, that he came to camp and he was told, just work on your stuff, you know, just work on what you need to be doing to get rid of the, ready for the season. And that was things that had nothing to do with producing good looking balls off the bat in BP from day one.
Mm-hmm.
So it looked like he was not hitting the ball well because he was trying to do different things.
Right.
And the Tigers coaches were all going, are we going to need to like get another player? Because I don't think this guy's going to make it. And it's sort of like he realized he didn't learn about this until later. They said, you know, we were really worried about you. We didn't think you could hit. They said, I think after he got about his 200th hit of the season. So he said if there was one thing he would do. He only told me this one time. Every time I've asked him to repeat it, he's kind of, he's conveniently forgot it. He said, I would tell the new guys when they come in, be able to hit from the first day just to give them a little taste that they can trust you.
Right.
Because, and I think this is also a Hanshin thing and a Giants thing.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the other teams now are pretty good about this. They're a little more flexible and willing to give the foreigners, maybe not Cebu, but most of the teams are.
Yeah.
Used to be all the teams, if you like looked like you couldn't hit in camp, they'd say, next.
if you're an import player, yeah.
Right. Or a low draft choice guy, or you know, out of high school or something. And
oh yeah,
next.
Yep. And also with the Tigers, I'm just wondering. I saw Shintaro Fujinami throw a bullpen or something, and it just hit me. I just wonder what he's going to do this year. What he's going to be this year. He's been such an enigma. I don't know if I'm going to pile any expectations on him at all, but maybe the switch will go on for him somehow. I don't know. Yeah. You don't have any, I think a lot of Tigers fans are fed up. And if he doesn't produce this year, if he doesn't meet their expectations, then I think they're going to be ready to give up on him.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd sure be willing to give him an opportunity if the Tigers want to get rid of him. I'll take him, because he's got a huge, not the potential he had a few years ago, obviously, but his own. But in the sense that he hasn't taken a step forward in 2 years, so he's more or less, you know, that ceiling is lowering for him, but. He still could be pretty good. He's just might take something to find himself. I don't know what, you know, what a shock. Jim doesn't know what exactly is the issue with Fujinami. That's a headline news. Like who does, you know? So sorry to make it sound like I actually have answers to anything.
Yeah. All right. And moving to the Fighters now, the rookie who, essentially, he's going to be the big ticket seller since Shohei Ohtani has gone to the majors. And that's rookie Kotaro Kiyomiya. And he had an injury to his finger.
Yeah.
Through camp and wasn't really swinging. I think that was, I want to ask somebody, but I think that injury was pretty much overstated, so that they could get him to work on his defense. But there are two things I wanted to point out about him. I think if you remember last year when he was drafted, I said, I'm just worried about his footwork and his defense and the physical traits that he brings. And he's already lost some weight. You can see that he's getting into better shape. His lower half is, you know, he's developing. I just love what the Fighters do in terms of developing players. Some of whom I think have overachieved because of the development program that the Fighters have. But I just like what they do. And he just looks like he's in the right spot to me.
Mm. Well, he's very, you know, I was impressed with his, he looks, you know, he has, he was a little pudgy in high school, but he is, having said that.
Kind. Yes. Yeah.
No, I mean, I never thought he was fat. He's very quick. I mean, he's got good foot speed for a guy of his build. He reminds me of a rugby player like his father. Mm-hmm. I can't say much about his father's rugby career, but he does remind me of a rugby player, you know, big and athletic. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not really worried about him picking up the skills he'll need to play first base, because if you're athletic and you're paying attention and you care, then yeah, you can probably do it. And he seems to know how to play. He seems to understand what baseball's about. You know, he's not one of these guys who's just a tools guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the most athletic player on the team, but he doesn't really understand what needs to do to be better. So, no, yeah. I think he does. I think he seems smart enough and smart for a high school kid coming out of high school and athletic. So yeah, I think he has a chance to have a big future.
Yeah, and I did see that he had an at bat today. He came in as a pinch hitter and he struck out, but you know, he laid off some pitches that were outside the strike zone.
I thought you only saw highlight. Home runs today. Okay. We have to differentiate between canned and live, John.
Canned and live, okay. As opposed to fresh.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I like the way the fighters develop. And I would even venture to say if he doesn't get the defensive part of the game down, then he won't even start games. Either he'll be on the bench or they'll put him on the farm and let him play some games there, like they did with Sho Nakata, who couldn't really play any defense when he joined the team.
Well, that's as I've been through that story before, so I'll not bear repeating, but he had a variety of issues, I think most of which were created by the team, so that's I'm not gonna harp on that too much.
Okay. So, but they did say about Kiyomiya that the swing, they said there's just something special about just a swing. And so we'll see how that plays out this season. You know, that finger problem, like I said, I think it was kind of overstated and they were just being careful with him. And in the meantime, you work on your defense, son. We know you can swing the bat fairly well. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. Like I said,
yeah, it could be fun.
But you know, he's a Japanese power hitter, and the Fighters finished fifth last year. So I'm thinking they are going to want to play him, but my gut tells me that they will not rush him.
I think that's accurate. I don't think there's any need for him to be an everyday player. Now they do have, having spoken about Nakata, the Fighters have an issue in that they play in the minor league players play in a park where the ball really carries. And basically, if you hit the ball hard in the air, it's a home run.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you mishit it hard in the air, it's a home run. And it's a tough learning environment for kids who are then going to go play in Sapporo Dome,
which is the opposite atmosphere to be in. Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw this with the young Daikon, and we are, or Yo Daikon, depending on, you know, which.
Or yes, we can, baby.
or that fellow as well. thank you, Barack. Okay. Nakata, who they put out. And I mean, even adjusted for the inflation of playing at Kamigai and playing in the Eastern League, they put up really, really good numbers. Just crazy stuff, you know, exactly like they should have done in Sapporo Dome. But the adjustments were awfully hard for them to make.
Yeah.
That it created a kind of a... here I am, pseudo psychological babble. It was not a smooth. Neither of those two guys had very smooth adjustments to the first team, despite outstanding minor league numbers.
Right, but we know that the Fighters are trying to build their own stadium somewhere in Sapporo, so they'll try to figure out something where the atmospheres are similar to their minor league park, or maybe have it just be an easier place to hit home runs, or just match them up, because. That doesn't make sense, right? If you got a place that's really easy to hit home runs in, and then you
play. I've seen that in the majors too. in that I remember the Dodgers moved their AAA team from they were in Los Angeles, they were in Albuquerque for a long time, and they were in Las Vegas, and then they moved them, and I think it was Las Vegas they were, and they moved them to somewhere in the Midwest because they felt the adjustments were too hard going from a real lively atmosphere, you know, high run environment in the minors in the high altitude minors in the Pacific Coast League to a very pitching oriented park at Dodger Stadium, and they felt the adjustment was just too hard to make or too difficult, you know, it was too big a jump, so they switched they left the Pacific Coast.
Right. Yeah, that's the first place that comes to mind for me, and then the other place would be San Diego, because that's such a park that was hard to hit in when it.
They've modified it, and of course they're going to do something to. I don't want to actually go into that, but yeah, okay. San Diego was like that, but yeah, so that's an issue, and it's I think it's a really big issue. It's probably the biggest issue is with the fighters. The Marines also, to some extent, have this issue in that their minor league team. It plays in a high run environment, and their home park is fairly pitching friendly.
Okay. All right. So next up, we have. Should I play the music? I should play the music. Let's play the music. Fielding questions.
Why don't you play the music, John?
Okay. All right. This question comes from John Gibson. He's the host of the JBW. Podcast, which
wait, you're the way, hold on a second, hold us on. You're the host. This John, who's this John Gibson? Oh, hold on. Okay, it is okay. It's 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, me. I have something hit me the other day, and we didn't get a question from our listeners, and I thought we should address this because
did it leave seam marks?
I didn't check.
Okay,
I don't have all right. With the Olympics going on, I don't have time to look in a mirror. So here's the question. Do you see any of the major league free agents coming to MPB as a result of the non-collusion pact among owners in the United States and Canada? Jim.
Well, first of all, that's a loaded question because you assume that there's some kind of collusion, which I think is probably, you know...
I said that there's a pact to not have collusion.
Yeah, there might be, but I don't know there is. I don't know what nature it is. Speaking of my pet theory about that, since we're going to talk about things we don't know, is that probably somebody put out somebody did a study. Somebody, MLB, commissioned a study that showed the effectiveness of older free agents and long-term contracts. Uh-huh. And the difference between – and they didn't say – you know, they just handed it out. And the difference between now and when they actually had – you know, when they had proven collusion back in issues in the 80s and 90s was that – now the teams, and they talk about, oh, the teams are sabermetrically attuned. You know, they're sort of tuned into the new truth. And I don't think it's that, but I think that hiring so many people with backgrounds in sort of economic analysis, the teams are willing to listen to things like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, in 1984, they had to have Peter Uberoff tell them that they were a bunch of dummies for signing expensive players, and that if nobody gave any free agents a penny, they'd all be cheaper. So I don't think that's happened, but I think everybody was less conducive to the ideas now, and whether that's collusion or not is another issue. But anyway, okay, so that out of the side, several of us have talked about what might happen this year. Somebody said it on Twitter, and I don't know who it might. Was it you or someone?
No,
said,
I haven't said anything about it.
Oh, okay. Somebody said, why don't some of these guys? Why don't the Japanese team offer some of these free agents contracts? And my thought was, not going to happen this year for a variety of reasons. Major league teams, Japanese teams organize and think differently about their rosters than major league teams do.
Mm-hmm.
They like their rosters to be set before February 1st. They want to know who's going to be on their team. They want to know the roles. They want to know. They don't. And they also want to. They want guys who are going to invest in Japan. Now, if you're a player, on the other hand, let's say you're Eric Hosmer looking for a contract, and you get a 1-year contract to play in Japan, or you get a short-term contract to play in Japan, the team's going to think, well, then, you know, if he's going to leave as soon as he gets a better contract. Two, he's going to lower his value by coming to Japan he's going to say, well, actually your value, you know, my value is this, I'm willing to play for this much money. Now that's an economic question, and I don't think I've hit the nail on the head, but I'm saying it changes the market. As soon as Japanese contracts become a factor in your U.S. salary negotiations, it alters the dynamic of that discussion. Maybe a big amount. But let's say all these teams, there's still a slew of guys who are unsigned.
It's gone from Uehara being one of them, who said he wouldn't come back to MPP.
No, he wouldn't.
Retire.
Yeah. That's correct. But there's a slew of guys who are unsigned, and it's gone from 50%, 51% at the end of January to about 45% at the end of, at the end of February. It's really outrageous. And so I don't think, all these things that have forced this situation, and I've talked with Craig Calcaterra. We've exchanged ideas about this. I don't know if we talked. We've exchanged ideas on the internet with MSNBC guy. And, there's a variety of factors that make this very, very rich field for that kind of, sort of a semi-lockout of expensive players.
Semi-lockout, yeah.
Okay, so the point being that I wouldn't expect it to, although it started very suddenly, nobody expects it to disappear next year. And everybody going, wait, that was last year. This is this year. Let's spend lots of money on guys just because we can. Which means that in this market, if this is going to be the market until a new CBA, a new collective bargaining agreement between MLB and its union, it means Japanese teams should be thinking right now, which free agents do they want to go out and get for next year? Because these guys are not going to be happy with what they're getting in MLB. And some of them, if the deal is right and the team is right and the discussions are right, these guys can come over. And what I want to say is, the last bit I want to say, and I've already said way too much, is that with MLB deciding how much they're not going to pay for amateur players because of the signing pool bonuses for the draft, the amateur draft, and how much they're not going to pay for international players because of the international signing pool bonuses, signing bonus pools.
Right.
And they're not going to pay contracts like they used to because they don't think it's a good idea collectively. This is a golden opportunity for Japan to say, hey, look what you're doing. You're, squashing your own market. We can get in on this game.
Yep. Which is exactly why I thought of this question.
Mm.
I thought it would be great to have a guy, and I actually didn't look at the ages of the free agents, and now that I look over the list, most of them, looks like 80 to 90% of them are 30 or above.
Yep.
And a lot of them are over 34. But there's still some quality guys out there who, if you brought them to your team here in NPV, would just turn them. I mean, you'd be able to market them. They're not injury prone. None of the guys I see on the list have, you know, missed like 100 games recently in a season. And there's some quality players out there who, at first I thought the best way to do this, if you're a Japanese team, is to do what you were saying not to do, is to sign a guy for 1 year and then say goodbye to him. Because I would think that the player who's coming over, the free agent's coming over, would want to use MPB as a stepping stone to get back to the major leagues.
Yep.
But looking at their ages, yeah, some of these guys could figure, hey, look, I could come over here and play X number of more years before I retire and, get in on the Brandon Laird situation, just have fun and win championships once in a while. And
well, that being different, because Brandon Laird came when he was 25.
Yeah, I know he's younger. I know he's younger, but I'm just saying, he, make the adjustments, enjoy the ride. Mm-hmm. I don't think Brandon Laird's going back to MLB, so
yeah.
I don't think. We don't know.
I don't think so either.
But I don't think. So that's what I meant. Not the age comparison.
No, okay. I gotcha.
So, these guys on this list, there are some guys who, if you brought a couple of them over, at least they have the major league name. And, Carlos Gonzalez is still out there.
Mm.
And he's a player with some power in the swing, and he's only 32. So, I just thought, yeah, exactly. MPB has a golden opportunity to jump on a player. Some team out there could bring a player over and I thought, and certainly pay him whatever, because I think they're in a good negotiating position.
Sure, because MLB said, we're not going to pay, we're just going to, they're basically saying, look, MLB is telling the world, we're the only game in town. You have to pay for whatever you're going to have to play for whatever we're going to pay you, because they're saying, and they're laughing when they say this. And I mean this sincerely. They're laughing and they're saying, what are you going to do? Go to Japan? And they really, MLB seriously deserves a smack in the face and a kick in the ass.
High heat.
And MPB is perfectly positioned to do so. And here's another way MPB could do this. MPB could say, we're going to have a new rule with our union. They're going to have a new agreement with their union that says MPB teams will no longer be allowed to pay MLB teams more than $50,000 for amateur players' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That's like $10 million that won't go to MLB teams every year for AAA players they don't want.
Yeah.
Because the MPB teams will just say, oh, sorry, we got a rule that says we can't pay so much anymore. Isn't that too bad? And it's awful. Exactly what MLB does. They'll say, we're just not going to pay amateurs. We're not going to pay you for a posting. Then now they might have to negotiate that with MLB, but MLB is going to say, no, we can't allow that. They might. But the point being, NPB's job in this relationship is just to, as one of the executives said, bend over and take it. So
they're doing excellent work then.
They're really good at it.
They ought to get a raise.
No, they pretty much get kicks in the teeth, you didn't smile. You didn't smile when we were sticking it to you.
Wow.
So, but this is a good opportunity for NPB to say, look, as long as you're going to cut your costs, you're lowering the market value. We can play in this game. Now, there are reasons why MLB can do this. And it's, it goes beyond, it's largely has to do with the structure of their income. The fact that most of the teams don't have to pay for stadiums. Is a huge one. The infrastructure is different. The game's organized different. The media is huge. The media market's huge. But on other levels, it requires NPB to find some backbone, find some money, find a plan. How can we exploit this market? Because MLB is setting itself up to look really, really stupid.
find. Yeah, well, you know.
And that's normally NPB's job, so.
Hashtag high heat.
You are correct, sir. All right, well, that was an excellent question.
It was. You got to thank that Gibson guy at that Japanese Baseball Weekly podcast or something.
I will send him an email. And you can send us an email with your questions to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat, or go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We will be back next time. I can't tell you when that will be, but we are going to get ready for our previews for the PL and the CL, and we'll be having that for you the 2 weeks prior to opening day. So get ready for that. And we will talk to you next time. Enjoy your preseason.
See you at the ballpark.